Good morning. We'll bring this committee meeting to order. This is Fisheries, and it is Wednesday, April 4th. The time is about 8:43, and present are Representative Johnson, Ledoux, Johansson, myself, Chair Seaton. And today we have one item on our agenda, which is HB 16, which is extending the sunset date on the Korean hair crab and scallop vessel licensing program. Is there anything to come before the committee before we get started? And I'd like to recognize that Representative Holmes has joined us. So this bill is just an extension of the sunset date from, and it's one pager for a change here.
You ready for a motion to move it?
From December 30th through 2008 through 2013. And our intent today is to introduce the bill here, what has happened in this fishery since it started, and get some public testimony and information from CFEC and the Department on Management, what has happened to these fisheries and how they're proceeding. And as you'll, if you had looked at the sponsor statement, there's a couple of big public policy issues involved in this fishery. This bill sets out an alternative or different route than the previous Limited Entry Act. And so what it does, it allows permits to be allocated or issued to vessel owners instead of participants, instead of a person that is participating. In the previous Limited Entry Act, it requires that commercial fishing limited entry permits or interim use permits go to a natural person, and that natural person has to be on the grounds operating the gear or at the operation of the gear. This program was an alternative that said that the fishing permit for fishing privileges would go to the vessel owner, the investor, whether that was a natural person or not. And since that went to the vessel owner, and in a number of cases to corporations, they did not have to be obviously on the grounds participating with the operation of the gear. So it's a public policy call. There's also been quite an amount of contraction that has been allowed in this in these fisheries. One, Korean hair crab, as we'll hear, has not been opened since the adoption of this for the 5 years. And we'll find out from the department whether they're anticipating any opening soon. The stock has collapsed is basically the reason why that's there. And the other fishery, the scallop fishery, has had a voluntary co-op which has been consolidated or restricted the number of vessels that participate in the fishery. So the other question is, how much of a consolidation of a fishery do we think is advisable for the state before we have possible constraints within the special right of fisheries? I mean, does it have to be get to the point where one boat harvests the entire stock in all of Alaska before that consolidation is a special right of fisheries, or if we get to three vessels harvesting all that stock, does that become a point where we need to make a public policy call? So with that introduction, are there any questions about what it is? Like I say, it's a simple sunset extension, but the reason we're having the sunset extension is to look at these public policy issues and maybe others that will be brought up. I mean, there are other effects in the operation of the fishery and the management of the fishery which are enabled by this, by consolidation, where you have fewer players and you have a much more manageable fishery. You can do things with that fishery if you have very few players. Our question is whether, how we balance that versus participation by fishermen and vessels in Alaska. Is there any other questions before we start? Okay, let's start with, do we have, let's see, I thought we had, let's start with presentation by CFEC so that we get some background before we go to the testimony by the public. Good morning. Would you introduce yourself for the record? And
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Frank Holman. I'm one of three commissioners at the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission, and our role is to regulate limitations in the commercial fisheries in Alaska. Had your introduction, Mr. Chairman, you said it was a simple bill, and it is. It doesn't even have any words in it to change, just a couple of numbers. I guess I would start by saying what the bill does is simply to extend the limitation, the vessel license limitation, for the scallop fishery and the Bering Sea hair crab fishery. And these fisheries were limited several years ago under a new system that was authorized by the legislature in 2002. And the system was to allow the limitation for only these two fisheries to be on the basis of the vessels that participated. The reason for doing that was strictly a conservation reason, and the traditional limited entry system that we have was developed under at a time when the primary fisheries were salmon fisheries, which were owner operated. And that fishery has and that system has worked well for many years. In the probably now about 7 or 8 years ago, and probably longer, it was in the scallop fishery. It was noted that the increasing pressure was reaching a proportion where a limitation might be in order, and so we the commission looked at that, and using the traditional method didn't seem to be appropriate because this fishery and the hair crab fishery have a similar pattern in that they have multiple skippers on vessels, so that if we use the traditional method would mean that that each skipper would be entitled to or eligible to apply for a permit, and this was would have produced about three times as many permits in the fishery, and it was already under pressure for conservation purposes.
Excuse me, Frank. Representative Ledoux has a question.
Was it not possible to do something such as doing a points system? I mean, so you're right, there might have been multiple skippers on each vessel, but if one skipper had had five seasons, for example, that skipper would be allocated more points than the skipper that had one season. And then I think that under the salmon limited entry system, you had to have a certain number of points, if I'm not correct. So was that given any consideration? And if it was, why did you decide not to go that way?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ledoux, the primary reason for not doing it that way was strictly for conservation purposes, because the limitation may have been able to be designed that way, but it would have, we think it would have taken a number of years before we could have gotten through the adjudication process with all of the applicants, and we didn't think it was worth the risk to have the season open for 4 or 5 years with three times as many participants, because while limited entry permit applications are in the adjudication process, those people applying have the opportunity to fish until they're decided. So we could have gotten through it maybe in 4 or 5 years through the appeal process, but we didn't want to take the risk of harming the fishery.
Representative Ledoux.
I guess I've got a couple of questions. First of all, is that adjudicatory process in which people are allowed to fish during the adjudicatory process, is that by statute or is that by regulation?
By statute.
So, follow up?
Representative Ledoux.
So did you give any thought to perhaps amending the statute for strictly for purposes of this fishery, because you did, there was such a need to make sure that there was no pressure on the fishery so that it wouldn't be like that, with maybe an expedited hearing on the folks who didn't get permits. Did you give any thought to going that way?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ledoux, well, I wasn't there at the time, but I would say that the due process available to all applicants would have probably not, we probably couldn't have gotten around that at all, and the opportunity to appeal would still be there. I mean, whether we shortened whether we tried to shorten that process by statute, I don't know if we could have accomplish that.
And Representative Ledoux, follow up.
I guess I'm wondering whether there's anybody from legal available to answer questions, because it just seemed to me that you could have done something like that if you had chosen to do so, and it would be the same standards as getting a temporary restraining order. In other words, if the person wanted to be allowed to fish during the time of their appeal, they would have to show that by a preponderance of evidence that they were most likely to prevail in that appeal process. I guess I'm just wondering whether that was considered.
Mr. Chairman, maybe I should just say how the process works, and you can there are attorneys online and in the House that probably could answer that better, but the first applicants go to a hearing officer, and through that hearing officer process, they may be granted or denied. From that stage, and that could take a year, because there's lots of, when we limit a fishery, there's lots of applicants at the same time. Plus, we have a backlog, and that was under consideration at the time of hundreds of cases before us. Next level of appeal is to the commissioners, and if the applicant was denied under a hearing officer, then they go to the commissioner, the three commissioners sitting as an appeal board. That could take another year or more, because they're not the only applicants in front of us. Then from there, they can go to, if they don't like the, they can ask for reconsideration from the commissioners. So that's another level of appeal. And then they can go to the Superior Court if they're still not satisfied with the Commission's decision. And then from the Superior Court, they can go to the Supreme Court. So you have at least five levels of appeal, and that can take years. So we didn't want to risk the fishery for that.
Representative Ledoux.
But I guess I'm just wondering whether or not you could have enacted a regulation or asked this legislature to enact a statute, you know, which only allowed fishing in the cases that they were most likely, that they were showing, you know, a real probability that they would prevail on appeal.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if I can answer the legal question, but I would think that if we had tried to make an exception for these fisheries, we would have had the same appeal from other fisheries. I mean, but let someone from legal answer that.
And we do have someone on from legal, but of course, your very statement is we are making a huge exception for these two fisheries. I mean, we're making statute. We made statute specific to these two fisheries. And so I think Representative Ledoux's question is, when you're making a statute, were there other changes that could have been made to make the system work since we were passing through a statute? So, but let's wait for legal, and we'll hold that question and go on through where the process was on. Thank you.
Because of the conservation issues involved, the legislature authorized these two fisheries to have a different system than the individual, and that was the vessel license system, because it kept the numbers of permits down. And you'll in your packet you can see that the department's the managers supported that issue. So for only this exception, only these two exceptions, did the legislature authorize that. And so, since we're the regulators, we follow the direction of the legislature. The legislature didn't give us any other options.
And Mr. Holman, Commissioner Holman, I just want to get it clear on the record here. I mean, there hadn't been an opening in Korean hair crab, and with the stock collapse, there wasn't anticipated to be for quite some time. So, I mean, the reality is we were making this call based on the different complexion in the fishery, isn't it? Isn't that what the real call was made that these were larger vessels that were owned by people who weren't necessarily on board, that had hired skippers, and wasn't that, at least in the case of Korean hair crab, the reason for doing this type of management instead of a personal permit?
Well, I don't think we looked at it that way. I thought that we did it particularly in the scallops, to reduce the number of units of gear rather than have each individual, and it could have been the same thing in the hair crab, rather than have each individual with a unit of gear out there. We limited the units of gear to the vessel, because if you would have had three skippers on a vessel and they each got a permit, they could have gone and each bought a unit of gear and been in that fishery. So that was the consideration.
Okay, thank you. Representative Ledoux?
You know, I'm like really confused when it comes to the hair crab. I mean, I understand the argument about conservation, that you're talking about pressure on the fisheries, mm-hmm. When it comes to the scallop fishery, which was an open fishery. But with respect to the hair crab fishery, which wasn't open then and isn't open now, and I guess, you know, I'm not a biologist or anything, but I suspect that she probably had some suspicion that it wasn't going to be opening in the immediate future. All of the arguments about, well, there'd be too many people who would be fishing during the interim while you were, litigating this, that doesn't make too much sense to me, because there wasn't going to be any fishing going on. Am I missing something here?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ledoux, I think that the consideration was that by putting a limitation on it, that it would be able to open sooner than it would without a limitation.
Follow-up, Representative Ledoux.
And so this was enacted about 4 years ago. And sure. When do you think now, do you have any estimation as to when this fishery is going to open up?
Mr. Chairman, probably a good question for the biologist.
And we'll get that from them when they come.
So, thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner, go ahead.
So when we got to the license limitation, what we looked at in there and was the units of gear. There was when we limited that fishery, there was concern by some people about corporations holding these permits. So in just looking at the statistics about who was fishing and who wasn't, some of these corporations that do own the permits are essentially partnerships that were formed into corporations mainly for business purposes. So they're not they're not in the sense of General Motors, but they're small corporations of a few people for the most part. And in the hair crab fishery, for example, those that are qualified now, about I think there's 70 or 75% of those corporations have owner-operators, that someone in that corporation was or has been the operator in that fishery. In the scallop fishery, there's at least three, maybe four, of the eight that have owner-operators on board. So it's not a total one way or the other. It's a mixed bag in who's fishing and who is holding these permits. So I wanted to say that in the sense that when we say, well, corporations could own it, that's true. But for the most part, there's still a lot of owner-operators involved in these corporations. They're not General Motors.
And Commissioner, wasn't the consideration that allowing corporations own permits means you don't have to be the participant? Participation doesn't have to be there on the grounds, because of course a corporation can be back east and have someone harvest their fish and get a check back because there's no individual requirement for participation. Wasn't that kind of where the corporation, not the size of the corporation, but the fact of issuing permits to corporations meant that you no longer had a participation requirement?
Well, that's true. That could happen. I was just pointing out that for a lot of it, it didn't happen that way. So okay. There's a mixed bag in there.
Sure. Thank you.
And I think I know you got a lot of people here behind me, but I think that you'll hear from the biologist that it's the scallop particularly is a well-managed fishery, and it is doing very well. It's probably exceeding some of the concerns about bycatch that were there. The fishery, as we understand from the biologist, is orderly, and it hasn't exceeded its harvest guidelines. They can explain it a little bit better, but in the various areas, there's different harvest guidelines. Some are have met those guidelines, and some haven't. So I think the fishery as it is now is well managed, and of course the hair crab is still closed. One of the things I guess I would say about the extension of the sunset date is that this bill doesn't allow us, CFEC, to do anything new or unusual that we haven't already done. It's just simply taking these two fisheries and giving them another 5 years, and the legislature can certainly easily look at them again. I have heard some comments that you know, like this is the beginning of some kind of major shift in the state's management, but we're not advocating any additional fisheries in this regard, nor do I know anyone who is. So As far as we're concerned, it's still confined to these two fisheries.
Okay, thank you. And I'd like to interrupt that, recognize that Representative Edgman has joined us.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think maybe that's enough for me at the moment. I'd like to see a lot of people behind me, and I know you're up against the timeline here, so I'll end for now unless there's questions.
Okay, we appreciate that background, and thank you. Are there any questions for CFEC at this time? So you'll be around so we can get back.
You know where I am. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Okay, let's go to, let's take the folks that have traveled here and that are in the room first. And so let's go with Bobby Minio. I'm probably mispronouncing the name. Good morning. Would you go ahead and state your name on the record and who you represent?
I'm Bobby Minio. I work on the provider.
Good morning.
Good morning. I was born in Alaska. I was in Kodiak, so I lived there till I graduated. And after I graduated, I looked around to see what kind of jobs I want. So I went out fishing with my dad, and it stuck, and it's pretty much my job. It what paid for my house and stuff, and it's pretty much, and I just want to make sure this goes through and stuff. Pretty much all I have to say.
Thanks. Bobby, how long is your season, or how long is the season that you work? Now, you're in the scallop fishery,
yes.
Is that correct?
It depends on, usually it goes 8 months, but we got done early this year. And we got done after Christmas this year, so it all depends on the weather and how stuff goes, and it's not always certain what happens and stuff.
So do you start in the spring or generally, or starting in the summer and then going through Christmas?
Yeah, summer and then and up at the winter and at the winter.
Great, thank you. Any other questions for Bobby? Thank you very much for your testimony, Bobby. Let's go to John Lemar.
Lemar.
Okay, sorry. Can't read all the writings here.
All right, Chairman. I'm John Lemar, captain of the scallop boat Ocean Hunter. And I was born in Anchorage in 1981. I went up to Dutch Harbor and started working in the canneries there. And after a few years, I was able to get on the fishing boats and work my way up to being a skipper of boats in 1989. And after a few years of that and getting to know some other fishermen, five of us decided we'd like to pull our money together and buy our own boat, which was the Ocean Hunter, which I'm captain of now, and fishing scallops from July till late December, middle of January usually. And I just don't feel if a permit was issued just to myself that would be fair to the other four guys that helped me buy this boat, because I wouldn't be capable of doing that on my own because of the, you know, just the capital expense and the time. You know, I've been working almost 6-7 months straight, and occasionally one of the other guys comes up and gives me a short break, but I fish almost 6-7 months straight in Alaska. And so, thank you.
Thanks. What size vessel is the Ocean Hunter? And
it's 100-foot.
100-footer?
Yes.
And about how many crew do you have when you're scalloping?
The smallest we have is 6. The most is 12, including myself.
Okay, great. And what size dredge do you use?
15-foot.
15-foot dredge. Do you call it a dredge, or do you call it a dredge? What do you call it?
I call it a dredge.
Okay. Great. And the construction of that, you know, all the committee doesn't know how the is that rings and chain links? Is that what the dredge is?
Dredge is, you know, the mainframe is kind of basically, some people call it a drag or a rake. It's kind of an A-frame that the bag is attached to, which is made out of 4-inch steel rings that are crimped together.
Okay, so they're 4-inch steel rings.
Yes.
And that allows any of the small stuff to go on through the rings. Is that the purpose of having the
Yes, bycatch, a lot of it will escape through the rings, and you have a, call it twine top, which is 8-inch mess that a lot of your bycatch will float through.
Okay, so the top then is 8-inch
stretch mesh, you know, like
Okay.
Great. A seine mesh type of thing.
Okay, fine. Thanks. Representative Ledoux.
John, you mentioned that if the permit had just gone to you, that you don't think it would have been fair to the other guys, correct?
Yes.
Suppose you had been, you know, the deal that you'd made with the other guys is that they owned the boat and you ran the boat, and then maybe you just shared in the profits of the boat. And then the permit had gone to them, and you hadn't gotten anything. Do you think that would have been fair?
Yes, because I own part of the vessel now.
My hypothetical is, if you didn't own part of the vessel, if you were their hired captain, if the partnership deal that you had put together was that they purchased the boat and they owned the boat in their name, you run the boat, and you split the profits from the enterprise, and then they had simply gotten the permit and you hadn't gotten any permit, do you think that would have been fair?
It wouldn't be fair, but I don't think I would have went into the partnership with the guys that I wouldn't have the security that I would be guaranteed that, you know, right to fish. And just, you know, the same with, like I'm saying, if I get it, then I could walk away and leave my partners with nothing. So I don't think I would have gone into a contract with in that scenario.
All right, thank you.
Okay. Any other questions for John? Seeing none, thank you very much for coming, John.
Thank you.
Mark Candianis. Good morning, Mark. Would you go ahead and identify yourself for the record and who you represent, and go ahead with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Seaton, Chair. My name is Mark Candianis. I guess I can start by giving a little hit my history. I've been a captain, mate of several scallop boats in Alaska since 1980, and been involved in the fishery every year since then. Probably got the most history in the fishery, along with Tom Minio, who is one of the captains on the provider. I guess I'm now the captain of last resort. I'm getting up to be 60 next month, and sometimes it's a young man's game, but I do miss going out sometimes. I've seen this fishery go through a number of changes over the years. It was a very loosely managed fishery in the early 80s, and in the 1990s we had a big influx of boats from the East Coast, and the fishery was rapidly overcapitalized, and it was a really gut-wrenching, stressful situation for a number of years. We almost lost the boat that I had worked so hard to create and work with Fish and Game over the years to help, you know, husband the fishery. There were years out there where I was the only boat out there in the fishery participating, because people had gone off to other more lucrative fisheries, pollock fisheries, ground fish, whatever. But I stuck with the scallop fishery because I believed in it. When this overcapitalization episode took place in the 90s, you know, we worked with Fish and Game, the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council, CFEC, and a number of state agencies to help create a you know, a management, a new management regime for the fishery. We had an incident in the mid-90s where one East Coast boat turned in their state permit through a loophole and exceeded the quota in one area by over 100% and sailed off to Uruguay after that, after they, he wasn't prosecuted. We were shut down for 18 months. We all had mortgages, house mortgages, boat payments, insurances to pay. We almost lost the whole ball of wax, but we persevered. But with the help of Fish and Game, the North Pacific Management Council, the Board of Fish, CFEC, we've finally come to have some stability in this fishery. Finally. We've seen boom and bust, boom and bust years. I've seen really big years, and I've seen some really lean years. And now I'm not going to say we're in a boom cycle at all, but we've got some stability. We're not making, nobody's cutting a fat hog off the fishery, but we do have some stability in the fishery. I was offered a permit a few years ago to purchase from one of the outfits that had left and gone to the East Coast. I was offered it and I declined. I told my wife, I said, well, I think, you know, Tom Minio, he's been, I've worked with him for a number of years. I think it's time to him to get an opportunity to get into the fishery. And they made an agreement with the owner of that, and they made payments on it. We still have, he still, I believe, has another year and a half to make payments on that permit. But he's done it, and he deserves it. He's worked for it. All I can say is we've got some stability in the fishery. I think it's a success story. There's been other fisheries in the country that have looked at this as a model for their fisheries. It's really been a success story, and I got to say I'm proud of it, and I feel like I'm kind of defending myself here because I don't know what the outcome of what you people are going to do with this, but it's a culmination of 27 years of work that maybe is on the chopping block here, because if this thing goes away and you decide not to extend this, there's no doubt in my mind that this co-op and all the work we've done is probably going to go by the wayside.
Thanks, Mark. Can you explain the co-op a little bit for us?
Well, the co-op was created, one of the, there's a lot of aspects of the co-op, but we created this because there was, partly because there was overcapitalization in the fishery, and there's only so much money that you can generate on a boat to pay for, you know, expenses, crew, and insurance and everything. We also thought it was best to minimize the amount of effects on the bottom. There's economic reasons, and there's also biological reasons that we formed this thing. For us to create this co-op, the provider who has probably had, you know, the largest catch history over the years, we ended up giving up half of our historical catch to entice the other boat owners to join the co-op. So we gave up quite a bit, but we formed this thing, and it's proven to be worthwhile. The captains of the other boats, we work very closely with each other, where we're pretty much in a competitive move. Mode when we see areas of high bycatch, we have tried very hard to work to avoid them. There'll be testimony coming behind me that will demonstrate that we've really reduced our impacts on the bottom and our bycatch of our major bycatch species, which is crab, and it's been good, I'd say.
I had a question.
Go ahead.
When you say you gave up half your catch history,
right?
How can you tell me how you did that? Or it wasn't an IFQ fishery, so you didn't own a catch history. What are you meaning?
It's not like a halibut IFQ fishery where people are given allocations of their, you know, their historical or whatever they got of halibut that they caught or they bought or leased from somebody. This is, you know, we averaged over so many years what our historical catch of scallops were, and I think our historical catch of scallops for the provider was in the neighborhood of 300,000 pounds, And to form the co-op, I agreed that the provider would only be, under the co-op rules, that we would only be allocated 150,000 pounds per boat, per the boats that had the most history of in the fishery.
Okay. In other words,
so we basically took half of our quota to give it up, and then hopefully we, you know, work our way into that.
Okay. In other words, you guys had a private agreement in which you
right.
said the big boat, the bigger boats or the higher producing boats are going to get X amount per year, or
right.
depending upon what the quota is, I presume.
On particular areas. It's all split up amongst, you know, statistical areas. There's quotas for each statistical area. And
okay. And do all the members of the co-op participate? Do their boats go out and catch those, or are those caught by one or two boats for all the co-op members?
I think there was, you know, in the co-op agreement, in the original co-op, there was maybe, roughly four or five vessels that were involved, and some of those guys just decided they didn't want to be in. They some of them left to go back. They were, you know, the license limitation, you know, gave some of the licenses to East Coast operators. That now they've got a big bloom on the East Coast. They had headed back east, and Tom Minio and others picked that permit up, and that's how we've, you know, that's part of the, you know, process that we've gone through with the licenses that have been available. Maybe I'm not answering your question.
Well, no, I think you are. I'm just trying to find out if all of the members of the co-op go out and harvest scallops every year, or whether some of the members of the co-op have their amounts harvested by another vessel that participates in the co-op.
There are maybe a few, not very many. I wouldn't say there's a lot.
Okay.
A lot of that going on.
Thanks. Representative Ledoux, did you have a question?
No.
Is there any other questions? Mark, what's the size of the provider?
The registered length is 117, and it's 123 overall.
Okay.
It was an old beam trawler that we picked up that was retired out of Maine.
And what size dredge you use?
We use two of the 15-foot New Bedford-style dredges.
Two of them, one on each side?
Right. And that's traditional. That's a pretty standard scallop operation.
Okay. Great. And just for everybody's information on the committee here, there's actually two programs, right? There's a limited entry program that is in place from the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council, mm-hmm. the federal waters, and then of course what we're considering here is the state water limited entry program. And just so everyone knows, our action here is not going to change what happens in federal waters. And
I fully understand that. I don't know if you're aware that a lot of the beds, it's pretty much of a near shore fishery. We fish anywhere from 25 to 80, 90 fathoms, and some of those beds, they, you know, horizontally or vertically cross into the realm of inside outside state waters. So from management side, it's going to be very difficult if you open that up to an inshore fishery, so to speak. It's going to be pretty difficult to manage without putting transponders. The costs of observer costs are pretty exorbitant. It doesn't lend itself well to a small boat fishery. Although there are some small boats that have participated in the fishery, I'd like to add in the under our co-op rules, we've had some set aside in areas for boats that are not in the co-op. We've left, you know, given them opportunities to fish in areas that, you know, that are inside state waters and outside state waters, and we'll let them, you know, harvest what they can before we'll, before we go in there.
And just one further question, and that is, are you guys required to have VMS on board?
No, but we'd be willing to definitely be willing to have that.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions for Mark? Seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony and
thanks.
Information. Mark, Jerry McCune.
Morning, Mr. Chairman, committee members. My name is Jerry McCune. I represent United Fishermen of Alaska. We were neutral on this bill last time, and we're neutral again, but I wanted to say that I haven't had any complaints over the 5 years from any fishermen or any complaints to on the bill. The present sunset coming up on the bill here, nobody's really contacted me or anything. Although a lot of our members were nervous about this type of ownership, I had a long talk with the Limited Entry Commission, and you know, UFA wouldn't support this going anywhere else but to this small fishery and letting this small fishery take place. So we wouldn't support it going any farther than it is in this particular fishery. It works for it, but we wouldn't want to see any other fishery going that way. Okay. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Is there any questions for Jerry? Thanks, Jerry. Appreciate that. Vanessa Glenn Ken.
Andini.
I'm just here to answer questions. I believe Steve
Doherty
is also.
Oh, sorry.
Changed my last name.
Okay. Thank you. I didn't see it was for questions. Are there any questions the Department of Law? Oh, Vanessa Tendi. Oh, hello. You used to be a staffer around here. I just couldn't read the name here. And Representative Ledoux.
Yes.
Yes.
Questions?
Representative Ledoux, can we wait and get through the public testimony?
Sure.
Okay, great. Thanks. We'll hold off on that for a few minutes. Teresa Candianis. Good morning, Teresa. And just so you know, we do have your written testimony here as well. For all members.
Okay. I was going to reference that and not go over it.
Thank you. Go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and who you represent. And
my name is Teresa Candianis. I'm the spouse of Mark, who just spoke, and partner and the active manager of the vessel provider. But I am also, I'm here to represent the North Pacific Scallop Co-op, of which I am the president. And I think I would ask you to read the letters that came from the Scallop Co-op, from the provider, from the Ocean Hunter, from the Alaska Crab Coalition, from Max Halsey, who is an incorporated person as well, and whose son operates his boat. And there are all kinds of iterations like that in Alaska fisheries, but for liability reasons and business reasons, a lot of small boats are also incorporated these days. And if you have a mortgage, generally speaking, your attorneys and your bank will require it. So I think that not to bore you with all those, but I would ask you to read them. It has the information on the amount of money we spend in Alaska, the number of our crew members, the percentage of our crew members that are Alaska residents, and the amount of money that in 2006 they actually earned, the Alaska guys alone. So, what I really want to talk about here, and you passed out, you have a couple of things. This was actually attached to the North Pacific Scallop Co-op letter. And this was a graphic that was prepared by Northern Economics in 2002 for the National Conference on Fisheries, the first one that was held in Washington, D.C. They did a poster on it. And it was basically looking at the performance of the scallop fishery pre-co-op and post-co-op, and looking at using the incidental catch rates of things. And, of course, our only prohibited species cap is crab, three species of crab in the Bering Sea and two in the Gulf of Alaska. So this also looked at the bycatches of incidental catches of things like kelp, rocks, starfish, things that indicate bottom harvesting techniques. And so the question was, is that did we change this before the co-op? Was our behavior before the co-op different than our behavior after the co-op in trying to avoid these bottom indicator species? And as you can see from this graph, 99 was the last year of the non-co-op fishery. 2000 was the first year of the co-op, and we did have substantial decreases in our bycatch. And so I'd just like you to look at that and consider what that means. I mean, that's a good indicator. Also recently, there's a University of Maine has been looking at the scallop co-op for a number of years. A professor there, Dr. Townsend, who is a cohort of Dr. Gordon Cruz and some of our other scientists from the University of Alaska, And so they've recently done an update on that sort of study, and this is particularly in regard to crab bycatch. So I'll reference figure two on these handouts that went out, the first one on the page, and you can see what happened. Our graphic from Northern Economics just goes to 2001, but this is a percentage of our crab bycatch limits that were landed, and this is looking at the Bering Sea. So you can see that even after 2001, our bycatch of those crab has gone down. So this graphic here would actually be showing a lower level of it, and we haven't done the work in as far as looking at kelp and rocks and so on. But you can see that the fishery has really diminished its effort on the bottom. And I'd also like for you to see on page on the figure 7 of this. This is sort of a little bit difficult to understand, but this shows the season length of the scallop total for all time. 99, the last year pre-co-op, with the number of boats fishing, our season length, and this is not like 500 total days in a year. Obviously, it's not. It's a simple addition of all the days that are open in all the areas. So we went from 500 days to 1,200 days in 2004. And of course, as you heard testimony from Bobby Minio, the amount of time that we're out fishing varies depending on issues like weather and crab bycatch and trying to stay away from crab and so on. What this means is this is a longer season, indicating that we're taking longer to do it. We have a limited number of boats, so our footprint is very small. And I guess the thing that most concerned us as a fishery was the fact that we have impacts on the bottom. We do fish a bottom gear, and that is a problem these days. We have environmental groups that watch that very closely. We have essential fish habitat issues on the federal fisheries where those things can impact a fishery and curtail it severely or even stop it if they think the impacts are too great. So our crab bycatch was an issue. The crab fishery is not a silent or a fishery that's want to sit back and just let something like that happen. They're very actively involved in this fishery, and you have a letter from the Alaska Crab Coalition that says we want this to continue because this has really reduced the effect on our fishery from the scallop fishery. So I think that the National Academy of Sciences effects on trawling study that was done a few years ago referenced three ways that trawl gear, which is essentially what a scallop dredge is, it's just a very small 15-foot trawl, that those fisheries could alleviate some of their impacts on the bottom. One is closed areas. Well, we have hundreds, thousands of square miles of closed areas to the scallop fishery in Alaska, and I think you probably have some information before you that shows the extent of those closed areas. The second thing that could be done is gear modification. These are also things that the scallop fishery has worked on very hard to try and reduce the impact of those scallop dredges. And then the third thing is effort reduction. So this is from the National Academy of Sciences. If you're reducing your footprint on the bottom, then you're reducing your impact. If you slow the fishery down and get rid of some of the competitive behaviors that lead to derbies and disregard for things that are as important as your catch of your target species, then you allow people to do those things that allow them to move away from crab, areas with crab, which we have to do extensively, and of course that has to do with having area to move away from if state waters are closed to us, and that reduces our ability to do so. So I think the scientists at the University of Alaska think, the scientists at ADF&G think, National Academy of Sciences thinks that this scallop cooperative is a model for many of these hard on the bottom fisheries in other parts of the world. In the way that our fleet got together, recognized that we had a problem, and in our case, we don't have history. We negotiated with each other to try and slow the race for fish among what we consider to be the professional scallopers in the state. And it was a very successful effort, and we it cost us, but we ended up with some stability. So we can't go out and have those 300,000-pound years. And in fact, the scallop quota has gone down from pre-co-op levels of 1.2 million to about 500,000 pounds a year. So we're doing the best we can with that resource. We've increased our quality by changing the way our packs are because we can go more slowly, and that's true of all the boats that are fishing. We're on the white menus of white tablecloth restaurants all over the Pacific Northwest and Alaska. If you're buying Alaskan scallops, they're more than likely coming from our boat or from Jim Stone's boat. And we've gone from a reputation in the early 90s and in the 80s having very poor quality scallops from Alaska to being a premier scallop. I mean, we're a very small fishery compared to worldwide scallop fisheries, so we're not price makers, we're price takers. If the prices are high, then we'll be at the top of that level. If they're lower, then we'll be at the top of that level. I mean, but we are very proud of what we've done, and we're not reluctant to talk about it. We were reluctant in the beginning because we thought people would see this as a grab, but we don't control what the non-co-op boats do. And in fact, the effect of lengthening the season has not only been good for our bycatch of benthic species and other organisms and for conservation, but it's been good for the smaller boats, incidentally, which the smallest license that was issued in the scallop fishery for what we call small boats is 70 feet, which I just wanted to clarify that because, you know, it's not like a small boat elsewhere in the state of 28 foot or 32 feet. So those smaller vessels just can't fish in the weather. They can't pull against the tides. In Prince William Sound, which is the highest catch per unit of effort in the state, used to be the fishery lasted 3 days because we all went in there and we went for it. Now that fishery will stay open 50 days or more. So those vessels from Homer and Seward, they can go, since they're not catching as much as we do, they can afford to steam over there and fish in that fishery. And they'll take more scallops now than they did prior to the co-op because we don't have those derbies going on. So I think there's a number of reasons why it's important that this HB 16 be approved and sent forward. I think to open that back up to open access flies in the face of conservation. And when you look at opposing gear groups like the crab fishery and the crab stock impacts, and they're saying go ahead with it, it's not because they like the scallopers, it's because they like the co-op. And they like what we've done to reduce our bycatch. And so I've just urge you to move ahead with this bill and keep us clear for another 5 years. You always have the opportunity, whether it sunsets or not, to come back and revisit the program.
Thank you, Teresa. Representative Johansson.
Thank you. You mentioned the the season has gone from basically a three-day rush to 8 or 9 months, as was testified earlier. Can you talk about the effects that you have on the local economies? If it's a season that's 8 months long and you're going out and back many different trips, what does that do for the ports that your ships call into? What's the effect on the economy? How much do you spend basically locally?
Yeah, it's we have two effects of local spending. I mean, on our vessel in 2006, we spent on fuel, food, parts, and repairs in primarily two towns, Yakutat and Kodiak, but the other boat spends a lot of time in Dutch Harbor because it doesn't pay for us both to steam all the way out there with the price of fuel these days. So that was over $500,000 for the season of 2006, which, you know, that's basically from July 1 until December. In addition to that, our Alaska crew members, our Alaska resident crew members, from last year earned over about $500,000 as well in crew shares and benefits such as health insurance, which we offer to our crew. The other impact locally is that when we go into the port of Yakutat, you know, I'm asking, you know, Bobby, who's the cutest scallop crew member in Alaska, I must say, and probably anywhere in the world, what do the guys spend on the boat? And she's a little saver. She's 24 and she's already bought her own home and only has a mortgage payment, paid for her car. So she's actually my model. But she says I need to have bigger lips, that they're too thin. So I have to get some advice from her on how to do that. But you know, she says the guys on the boat, they're spending, you know, I said, how much do they spend when they come in? She says, well, it doesn't matter if we're there for a day or 2 days. She said someone will spend $3,000. You know, but definitely even the captain's spending $1,000 on things. They go get a hotel room, they go to the bars, they buy electronics. Every guy seems like has got a computer and a television in their stateroom, and they're buying these in Alaska communities. So I think that the impact for such a small fishery is big in Alaska. We don't steam back and forth to the lower 48. You know, we come up in the middle of June and we stay until the fishery's over.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you for your testimony, Teresa. Jim Stone.
Mr. Chairman.
Good morning. Would you go ahead and identify yourself for the record?
Jim Stone. I'm with the fishing boat, Ocean Hunter, scallop boat. I'd like to thank the chairman and the committee members for meeting with us yesterday and opening your doors. I know it's a busy time. It gave us a good chance to talk to you and show you that while we're not technically Alaska residents, you know, we are still intimately a part of Alaska professionally and socially. You're going to hear plenty, or you already have, plenty of testimony from both fisheries management and industry about the license limitation program as it relates to conservation and sustainability to both scallops and bycatch. What I'm beginning to understand is that this is more an issue of a philosophy between of whether licenses should be given to boats or to people. I'd just kind of like to take the opportunity maybe to kind of try to compare apples to apples instead of apples to oranges. When I think of a state license issued to a natural person, I think of salmon or herring. Vessel-owned licenses, I think of larger offshore rigs. Larger offshore rigs, and normally a smaller boat is owned by one owner-operator. Frequently, the larger ones are owned by several people. They're more expensive and harder to get into. In our case, we have five partners, all lifelong fishermen in Alaska, and that's how we were able to buy such a large boat. Salmon and herring typically is a 2-week to a 2-month season. Scallop, as you heard, is 7 months. And so we do a lot of crew changes, a lot of different issues. Salmon and herring, there's no observer requirements. Scallops, it's mandatory. It's $350 a day, every single day, at the dock, steaming, no matter what. We have to have the observer the whole season, every single day. Smaller crew, salmon and herring. Typically, 4 would be maybe average. We have, you've already heard, 6 to 12. Salmon and herring, in management, the fisherman has no input whatsoever. In scallop, we work really close with the fisher, with the management, and we dial in our catch and our bycatch, and we have to work with them every single day. It's a lot different than the salmon and herring, where it's more run strictly by management. Salmon and herring, fishermen go directly to the processor. Scallops, we process them on board, clean them, shuck them, put them in size, put them in boxes, maintain them at zero. We put them on a freighter, we insure them, and we don't get paid until they make it down to the lower 48, usually the lower 48 if you go to Anchorage. And we don't get paid for till much later. Salmon and herring, there's no DEC or health board issues on board the boats. For us, there's rigorous regulations. We have to deal with the DEC, FDA, and we have to have inspections, and our boats have to be maintained in a certain fashion. Salmon and herring, Coast Guard regulations, there's not really any inspections. There are some requirements. With us, they're much stricter. We have inspections and stricter regulations. Insurance is obviously proportionally quite a bit larger. Maintenance on salmon and herring boats is typically not as heavy. There's a lot less hours, shorter seasons. We have our boats are running, pretty much 8 months a year. A lot of equipment to maintain. Salmon and herring, as far as onshore logistics, there's not too much support needed from home. I mean, there's a little bit, some parts flown up and whatnot. With us, it's constant. We have to line up freighters. We have crew changes. We have large crews, and long periods of time. They're shifting back and forth. We have regulations to make sure we're in compliance with inspections. A lot of reporting. We have to constantly analyze the scallop market. There's very few Alaskan scallops sold, so we have to kind of stay on top of that and make sure we're getting the right price. And the other thing, of course, that you've already heard is that salmon and herring is 100% harvested in state waters, and ours is about 20% in state waters. So I'd just like you to make sure that you all analyze these differences and perhaps make some kind of an advisory panel if you're going to go down this alley. And if you do that, include industry participants. We'd like to help you guys analyze that. Thanks.
Question for Jim. Seeing none, thank you for your testimony, Jim. Tom Minow. And I see it listed twice. Is it Thomas or Tom?
Thomas is my son.
Okay, so this is Tom. Go ahead and introduce yourself for the record.
My name is Tom Minio. I'm the skipper of the provider and owner of one of the permits. Been fishing scallops since 1980. Started scalloping with my father and out of Seward, and been running scallop boats since 1986. I probably have more landings in scallops than anybody that fish in the state of Alaska over the years. I've seen a lot of changes in the fishery over the 20 years I've been, or the 27 years I've been fishing it. And in the last 5 years, we've been able to pretty much work together with the boats that are in the co-op now. And the crew are able to, I mean, the skippers are able to talk back and forth between each other, and we're able to keep the bycatch levels at a bare minimum. So it's been working out pretty good. And we like to see it continue this way for a while longer.
Great, thank you. Representative Ledoux.
Can you give me any idea what these scallop permits are worth?
Well,
the range of prices in which they're bought and sold for?
They could be, it ranges anywhere from like $200,000 or per permit.
So, as I understand this, when this went into play, you weren't an owner of the vessel, correct?
No.
So you had to pay that kind of money in order to buy your permit.
Yes.
Whereas the owners of the vessel were basically just given.
Right.
Thank you.
Well, the reason also, you know, I didn't have to put out the money and the effort for the boat to stay fishing during all that time that I was running it, neither. And the cost of keeping them boats out there are pretty spendy. I mean, I managed the pursuit for 15 years before we retired her, and I did all the maintenance and the managing on the boat, and I seen the money that was going out year after year to keep it in the waters. We were spending anywhere from $100,000 to $250,000 a year just in maintenance. So, you know, the owners are putting out a fair amount of money to keep this boat out there fishing.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we have any other questions? We have one other person that's here, Thomas N. Minio. Good morning. Would you go ahead and identify yourself on the record, who you represent, and proceed with your testimony?
My name is Thomas Minio. I'm the mate off the provider. I was born in Seward, Alaska. I come from a long generation of scallop fishermen. My grandfather ran a scallop boat in the 70s, and my father, obviously you heard his testimony, ran his. So I come from a long generation. I've seen the up and downs living in Kodiak of what we've been through, you know, going through good times and bad times through this. But we stuck it out and still are here today fishing. In the last 5 years since we've been doing this program, I've seen a stable fishery, you know, where we don't have to worry as much as each year as before. We have good years, bad years. My father would buy a truck, and the next year he would have to sell it because the fishing industry was very unstable. But these last 5 years, it's been very stable, where nowadays it's kind of hard to find a fishing job in Alaska that's stable year-round.
Great. Thanks, Thomas. And does anyone have a question? I guess I did. When you said living in Kodiak, did you used to live in Kodiak?
Yeah, okay. For 20 years.
Okay, and you're now in Washington?
Yeah, because the boat, the owners bring the boat down to Washington for shipyard work to keep maintenance up so the boat's safe to fish up in Alaska. Because, you know, up in Alaska is pretty dangerous fishing. Alaska, so I go down to Washington and work on the boat to keep it up, so I moved down there so I'm out out at sea for 6 months at a time, so I'm not with my family, so I want to be with my family in the shipyard at least, so I moved my family down to Bellingham, Washington.
And Tom, is it, have most of the crew done the same thing? Most of the crew from Washington?
There's a few crew members that work on the boat in Bellingham, but it's just mainly, mostly me, my father, and maybe like one other crew member.
Sure, great. Any other questions? Representative Wilson.
You probably, well, you might be aware, but how many of the crew are stay in Alaska year-round?
I'd say about 4 or 5, but if you guys don't pass this bill, we probably would have to hire most of the East Coast people to fish up in Alaska, because they're obviously been doing it for many more years than people in Alaska, so they're probably a lot faster cutters, so we need the fastest cutters if you open up this to a derby, so the Alaskan people will probably be out of a job.
Thank you. Don't see any further questions. Thank you again, Thomas, for your testimony. Let's see if we can go to Julie. Well, let's see. We have one person in Anchorage. Let's go to Anchorage. Robin Williams. Are you online?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Robert Williams. Oh. I work for Coastal Villages Region Fund here in Anchorage.
Oh, great. Go ahead with your testimony. We just have a few minutes, but we appreciate you calling in.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to testify briefly that we're one of the CDQ groups in Western Alaska. It's a community development group, and I love the testimony that I've heard so far. We hope to build a fishing tradition in Western Alaska that's been built for the men and women that I've heard this morning. I just want to testify that we own two of the hair crab permits. And that, you know, my job is to provide opportunities for people in my communities to fish and work for cash so they can support their families. And I'd like to see this bill move forward and extend this license program, because we want to, this is an opportunity for our guys to work on in the hair crab fishery if and when it opens again. And that's it.
Thank you. Does anyone have a question for Robert? Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Robert. How many boats are there in the hair crab fishery?
I don't know how many permits there are. If it's 16 or 18. It's a closed fishery right now.
And how many of them are from Alaska?
I don't know the answer to that. I know that ours are.
Okay.
And Representative Wilson, we'll get CFEC up here to answer that question, or we'll put that on their docket. But I want, thank you very much, Robert. I don't see any other questions. Let's see if we can get to Julie Kavanaugh in Kodiak. Are you there?
Here.
Hi, Julie, would you like to identify yourself on the record and go ahead with your testimony, please?
Yes, my name is Julie Kavanaugh from Kodiak, Alaska. My family owns the SB Sylvia Star, and my husband has about a 30-year fishing history out of Kodiak and the Bering Sea. I'm here today to raise my concerns about HB 16. This bill relates to, of course, the scallop and Korean hair crab fisheries. Due to the Grenier Supreme Court decision, I believe this bill is constitutionally questionable. These two fisheries, along with the Chatham Strait Sable fishery, were used as examples to promote other questionable legislation in the year 2005. As an Alaskan who depends on fishery resources for a livelihood, I am deeply concerned. And I'll relate back to a previous testifier who said that this is a model for other fisheries, and people are looking at this as a good example. It has improved conservation, but there is no way to compare how a traditional limited entry system would have fared. This legislation should not be used as a marker for new management tools or regimes. This legislation has led to extreme consolidation, and there is excuse me, and this type of system allows for no entry level. Thank you.
Thank you, Julie. Is there any questions for Julie? We have one other person in Kodiak. I know we're running late here, but let's try and get Alexis. Watcha, are you online?
Representative Heaton. Yes, I'm online.
And would you pronounce your name for the record? And sorry that I'm not better at that. Go ahead with your testimony.
Yes, for the record, my name is Alexis Kwatchka. And I'd like to, I can't quite put it together as well as Julie has, but I'd like to say I have absolutely no beef with conservation benefits of stuff, and I think they can be achieved in a multitude of ways. And I had some questions. I don't like the precedent of this, and that's why I'm here testifying before you today. I have a question about the co-op structure. Are any of the vessels that aren't participating in the fishery in Alaska fishing in another fishery in another state receiving benefits from the fishery that's being prosecuted in the state of Alaska? That's my real beef with this style of management. Because I'm relatively sure that there's a scalper on the East Coast getting benefits from this fishery here. I think it's a real mistake for us to go to vessel limits and licenses to the vessels versus the operator of the vessel. I'm not doing a very good job here today, but I have a real problem with that. I think you're going to see a bill come down the line, HB 188, which looks at this a little more closely. And I view this as an onion. And the one block of this may not be a real big, or one layer of this onion may not be a real big deal. But if you stack up a bunch of layers of this, I can see co-op-based fisheries in all our fisheries, and I really don't like that. And I'll cut it short at that. Okay.
Thank you very much, Alexis. And are there any questions for Alexis? Seeing none, we will have to adjourn. We're being called to the floor. So we had a few other people to testify, and we'll address the subject in the future. And thank everyone for their participation. And we will, let's see, today is Wednesday. I wanted to announce that we will not have another meeting until next Wednesday. We will cancel fisheries for quorum matters here on Friday and on Monday, the Easter weekend. And so we will adjourn until next Wednesday. And it's